Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Folks, I don't know about you, but we had a great time this weekend. Congratulations to French Quarter Fest, putting on one heck of a show. We were out there Saturday. Unbelievable turnout. Wall-to-wall people. Very well run, I have to say. Had an opportunity to see a lot of policemen. Great coverage. Talked to several retired NOPD officers over the course of the day Saturday. Went up and down throughout the French Quarter, had a great time. Just wanted to say congratulations to French Quarter Fest officials. They managed the crowd, the NOPD, NOFD, EMS. EMS was out in a big way. A lot of people dropping out. Although the humidity was down, it was hot, and a lot of folks didn't take the necessary accommodations for same. But saw responses very quickly out there, and just wanted to take the opportunity to thank all the first responders and all of the folks, the volunteers, otherwise, that put on one of the greatest festivals ever, a free festival. Truly enjoyed it. Hope you did as well. We're going to visit with Guy Williams in the 12 o'clock hour, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll talk about local fraud targeting the elderly, the latest inflation news, interest rates, Jamie Dimon and shareholder newsletter. We'll talk about that and other issues as well. In the 11 o'clock hour, Brian Kish joins us. He's the president of the Emeril Lagasse Foundation. Got a chance to spend some time with them weekend before last. Had a blast. We'll talk about a lot of what they're doing and the broad perspective that they bring and the influence they have on so many different communities, not just the greater New Orleans area. You're going to be surprised as to the breadth and depth of what they're doing across the country. We start out today with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Noel. How are you?
Good to have you back. I know you were out of town. Hope you enjoyed visiting family and like, and that's always nice to do. But we always miss you, Raf, when you're gone.
Oh, well, thank you. Glad to be back in the saddle. Yeah.
I did want to say congratulations to you and your organization. The DOJ will be recognizing the efforts of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, I believe, either this week or next week, if my memory serves me correct.
This week on Thursday. Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
And
it's a real honor.
Yeah, you'll have some folks traveling to D.C. to receive that award.
Exactly. So what we're receiving the FBI Director's Leadership Community Leadership Award, which is the second time that we've received such an honor from the FBI during my tenure with the organization. And really what that is emblematic of is the fact that, you know, for 72 years, the Metropolitan Crime Commission has stood steadfast on mission to serve as a conduit between the public that has information about ethical, administrative, or criminal wrongdoing and the law enforcement agencies that we forward that information to, like the FBI. So when it comes to information about public corruption, the Crime Commission has done some remarkable work in providing the FBI with actionable information, over the decades. And some of the more notable cases that we've referred to the FBI involve Ray Nagin as the mayor of the city of New Orleans, Aaron Broussard, the parish president in Jefferson Parish. We're talking about Judge Cressup in St. Bernard Parish, and parish government officials all over the region. So what the FBI is acknowledging is that the information that we have supplied has resulted in some meaningful cases, and they're acknowledging the Crime Commission's role as their partner. And really, this is a three-legged stool, because the Crime Commission is a private organization. We don't have subpoena power. We can't compel anybody to report anything to us. With respect to the FBI, if they're trying to mine information about corruption in the community, the person that has that needs to step forward. And unfortunately, in Louisiana, whistleblowers haven't been treated particularly kindly. So that's why the Crime Commission was created in 1952 by the business community to serve as a conduit between the public that has actionable information and getting that actionable information to the appropriate law enforcement agency when it comes to public corruption. It's going to be the FBI. So what we do is that we don't self-initiate any of the investigations that we're involved in. Everything that we do is the result of citizen tips. We just don't provide a name. We write reports, and many of the reports will exceed 100 pages that we submit to the investigative agencies involved in it. So when those agencies are reviewing the information supplied by the Crime Commission, I'm a former prosecutor, I know that they need actionable information, they need predication or probable cause, and what we try and do is document the probable cause that's needed to open a file, and that means that when they take our information, they have to re-verify everything that we've submitted to them, but a high percentage of those cases that we send to them do result in actionable information that results in public officials that betray the public trust being held accountable for violating the law. So we're very, very honored and pleased by that, but it's really also, I think, an indication of the position of trust that we enjoy with the community that provide us with the information that we furnish to law enforcement agencies like the FBI that allow them to do their jobs and hold public officials accountable when they do cross the line and betray the public trust.
So talking about actionable information, you guys authored a letter to Keith Sanchez, the head of the Public Integrity Bureau for the New Orleans Police Department, on Friday, relative to information that y'all received from a source about the relationship between New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell and New Orleans police officer Jeffrey Vapi that seems to be an ongoing relationship, asking for an investigation. Tell us about it.
All right. So, we've been talking about this for a couple of years on your show. And on April the 7th, it's a Sunday, I got a text message from a known source providing me with a photograph of Officer Jeffrey Vapi and Mayor Cantrell dining on the balcony of a French Quarter restaurant at about 5:45 in the afternoon or in the early evening. So that picture is worth 10,000 words, because let's remind everybody that there was a PIB investigation that was underway going back into 2022. And a lot of the public is focused on the fact that Officer Vappy was the only member of the mayor's executive protection unit that was allowed into the apartment that she would stay in the Pontabla apartment. But another part of that complaint involved the fact that Officer Vappy was, while providing protection to her when she was dining in public, would be often observed by some of the other members of the executive protection team dining at the same table as the mayor. And there was a statement by one of the executive protection team members, Deputy Charles Ellis, that was given to the Public Integrity Bureau on December the 28th of 2022, talking about his concerns about Officer Vappy's alleged relationship with the mayor. And I'm quoting from Deputy Ellis. This is his statement to PIB, and we know about his statement to PIB because the city of New Orleans, quote unquote, inadvertently released his statement and everyone else's recorded statements to the public. And they went, the media got a hold of them and they've been published. But what his statement was, and this is verbatim, what I noticed about him was that he was being overly charismatic with the mayor, Ellis begins. Like she'd go eat dinner at one of her favorite places was Houston's, and protocol, and I know what the protocol is, you do not sit with the principal at the table, because if you're sitting with the principal at the table, who's watching your back? You see? So I noticed that, and I brought that to his attention, and he agreed and said, yeah, I see how that could look. Now, that was his statement to PIB December the 28th of 2022. Every member of that executive protection team, except for Jeffrey Vappy, is no longer on that unit. The only person that was there when Officer Vappy was seated at the table with the mayor and going into the apartment with the mayor is Officer Vappy. The other three executive protection team members are new. So fast forward it to April the 7th, and I get a picture presented to me of the mayor and Officer Vappy seated on the balcony of a street-facing balcony of a French Quarter restaurant. So the person that took the picture was not in the restaurant, was external to the restaurant, and observed them sitting on this balcony dining together. And that is the essence of some of the unprofessional conduct that PIB investigated back in 2022. So here we are in 2024. And nothing has changed other than the fact that Officer Vappy is the only remaining member that was there. And keep in mind that the PIB investigation from 2022 only focused on misconduct from Officer Vappy, because none of the other three members of the executive protection team were allowed to enter the Pontabla apartment. And none of the other three members of the executive protection team were ever have alleged to dine with the mayor. Because protocols for executive protection is that if you're going to be protecting your assignment, which in this case is the mayor, if you're seated at the table, your field of vision is cut in half. So you want to be separate and apart from the mayor to be able to survey the entire room, and not just half of the room or a portion of the room. And Officer Vappy, by seated at the table, this is even worse, because not only is he not aware of who else is in the restaurant, but now he's exposed his protectee, which is the mayor, to potential threats from people that are external to the restaurant on the street. And I felt when I received this picture that this is a matter that needed to be reinvestigated. So we sent this letter on Friday.
Rafi, let me interrupt you right there real quick. Just a couple of questions. But first, if you want to see that photo, you can find it at WWL's website right now. It's up. We were promised, correct me if I'm wrong, that there would be the security detail protocols would be revised and updated. As a result of this investigation, that was one of the things that NOPD had said that they would, in fact, do. Has that been done?
Yes, but there is nothing that I could see in the protocols that are published online that prohibit an officer from sitting at the table. Now, our referral says to review the protocols and the training. So it's fundamental to executive protection team training that the types of conduct that we're seeing on April the 7th and was the subject of the investigation back in 2022 are that the executive protection team member isn't seated dining with the mayor. So we were informed that Officer Vappi was on duty the weekend of April the 7th. Now, I don't have that in writing from the police department, but part of what we requested with PIB was that, you know, we ask, was the fact that he was seated at the table consistent with executive protection team training and protocols for the mayor, for Officer Vappi to be seated with his protectee on the balcony of the restaurant? I think that there are several potential professionalism and violations of the executive protection protocols there. And if not, that's another problem for another day with respect to the federal consent decree and what the police department promised to do. So, you know, you're right in raising that issue. That is a factor. We're asking them to verify that Officer Vappi was, in fact, on duty on April the 7th. We're asking PIB to also determine if Officer Vappi informed and received the permission of his supervisors to dine with the mayor on that day, because there's supposed to be supervision involved, and any deviation of normal protocols requires Officer Vappi to notify his supervisor and have that approved. And we are also suggesting they determine who paid for the meal. So, you know,
so this kind of
what the
erodes.
Official duty was for the mayor to dine out on April the 7th at one of the pricier restaurants, you know, in the city. But I think that that's an appropriate thing for PIB to look into, and why did they have to provide the meal for Officer Vappi as well?
This kind of erodes a justification for a security detail, right? Whether or not these are legitimate expenditures at the lowest level, at the lowest hanging fruit, separate and apart for what is a generally accepted practice as it relates to a security detail and how you go about executive protection and, you know, how you deal with your protectee. Whether or not the mayor wants to have a relationship with Jeffrey Vappi, that's up to two consenting adults. But why should the public be paying for this relationship to some extent, for them to enjoy all that the city has to offer while on payroll?
I mean, well,
you know,
exactly.
separate and apart from the protectee protocols, I mean, that in and of itself is the threshold question. And what it really does is it erodes the justification of a security detail, and then it completely undermines what the other members of the security detail, their role, and what they're expected to do. It just erodes the reputation, the credibility of everybody in that unit. And what I don't simply understand about Jeffrey Vappi is that when does he get it? You know, I mean, And when do his peers say, look, enough is enough? We're done with this. I mean,
so you're absolutely right. I mean, there's two fundamental paths that this investigation can go down. And quite frankly, I believe it should go down both. One was whether Officer Vappe was on duty on April the 7th, and the other is if Officer Vappe was off duty. So let's go down the path of if he was on duty. Everything that you just said refers to if he's on duty, he's being paid by the city of New Orleans to offer protection to the mayor. And this whole unit had come under scrutiny a little over a year ago. And what we're seeing on April the 7th of 2024 are some of the same things that he was investigated for and admonished about during that investigation. And here we are seeing history repeat itself. The other path that this could go down was if he was off duty, then his presence in dining with the mayor suggests that he's involved in a social relationship with the mayor. So if he's involved in a social relationship with the mayor, I think part of the reason that we cite in our letter of referral to the Public Integrity Bureau is that there are executive protection protocols that deal with employment conflicts. So if an officer is socially involved with one of his subordinates or someone that he's involved in this particular case in providing protection for, that's an employment conflict. And as you pointed out, it's of no moment. Nobody really cares. They're two consenting adults if they're involved socially. But the officer has an obligation under the police department rules to disclose a potential conflict like this. And this is an issue that came up in a PIB investigation a little over a year ago. Yeah. And here we are seeing deja vu all over again, the same thing playing out again. So PIB needs to go through this same process all over again. And, you know, not only is it cumbersome, you know, there's a shortage of PIB officers, and we've already done this once. And, you know, discipline is progressive. So if this investigation concludes that he violated any policy rules or procedures, then his discipline will be even greater. But even more importantly, either way you slice it, I don't see how the police department can justify allowing him to remain as a member of the executive protection team going forward with this. We'll have to see how this investigation plays out.
Well, I could tell you one thing for sure. If I was on that detail, I would not work with this guy. I'd request a transfer. And anyone that transfers into this unit knowingly and willingly and understanding the context of what's going on here, that does not speak well nor bode well for their judgment by any stretch of the imagination. We'll see what leadership has to do. This is the difference between credible leadership and otherwise. These are tough decisions that have to be made because the executive, the mayor, who obviously does not give a damn about anybody, will do what she wants, when she wants, how she wants, and it doesn't matter to her what people think. But the reality is, this is when you separate credible leaders from all others. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. We're visiting with Raphael Goinecci, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. If you want to see that photo, just a reminder, it's on our WWL website. Rafi, how does this usually work? Does the Public Integrity Bureau typically respond when you send letters as we just described?
Yes, they've already responded. They thanked us for our referral and indicated that they would keep us advised of the outcome of their investigation. So they responded immediately on Friday, and, you know, the matter is in their hands now. We'll await and see what they uncover with this. I would expect that this is going to take quite some time. So this is going to be, you know, another drain on resources for the police department. All because, you know, of one officer that didn't learn his lesson a year ago, the last go around. And, you know, we're going to see history repeat itself, at least from a public integrity or public integrity bureau perspective. They're going to have to reinvestigate this matter to determine if any new violations of departmental rules, policy, or regulations were involved in the matter that we presented to them of the dining event on Sunday, April the 7th.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this gets handled, though, because there was a number of significant criticisms of the by the monitoring team, the federal monitoring team, as to how PIB conducted this. The investigation the first time around. And I loved one part of their observation when PID's use of the phrase may have violated this rule. I had to chuckle when I was reading the monitoring team review from April 7th of 2023. I don't recall many police reports being done or findings or conclusions of an investigation that made the observation of may have violated a rule or a law.
So what the federal monitoring team pointed out, and this matter was ultimately resulted in a full-blown hearing in federal court presided over by Judge Morgan last year. And what the federal monitoring team presented was that this investigation was handled differently than other investigations. The monitoring team wasn't given access to some of the pre-investigative protocols in this, which was a breaking of what had transpired since the consent decree was in place. So all of this suggests that this investigation was handled differently than all the other investigations involved in it. Because keep in mind that not only was Officer Vappi under investigation for what occurred when he went into the Pontabla apartments, but the only people that know what actually happened when he was in the Pontabla apartments are Officer Vappi and the mayor of the city of New Orleans. And the PIB refused to provide what their pre-investigative plan was to the federal monitor. Finally, they relented and provided the pre-investigative plan, and the federal monitor pointed out that you don't have on your plan to talk to the mayor. you don't have on your plan, I talked to then Superintendent Sean Ferguson. Don't you think that they should be included? And keep in mind that by the time the monitoring team made those recommendations, Sean Ferguson had retired and he refused to cooperate with the investigators. And the mayor also refused Public Integrity's request to make a statement on this. So in many instances, their hands were tied. But it does demonstrate that the investigation and the concerns of the federal monitors was that this investigation was handled differently because it involved the mayor of the city of New Orleans. And I think that were it not for Ann Kirkpatrick being appointed superintendent, I think that Judge Morgan, when she issued her ruling on this, she pointed out that there were several deviations from the normal protocols for investigations that would have risen to the level of potentially violating provisions of the federal consent decree. But the judge relented from going to the point of sanctioning the city for violating provisions of the consent decree, because Ann Kirkpatrick, in her capacity as the new superintendent, promised to reverse the course of her predecessors, of both Sean Ferguson and Michelle Woodfork, and be more transparent and open, and agreed to rewrite the policies and procedures and to begin to cooperate more transparently with the federal consent decree monitors. So in many respects, everything that we've discussed was disclosed with respect to the federal monitor's report. And in this report, it also says that the monitoring team sees significant circumstantial evidence that Officer Backby acted unprofessionally while spending extensive hours in the Upper Pontabla apartment and while dining with the mayor with his back to the door of the restaurant. We see no reason for the ambiguous may have violated language in the context of what PIV stated were violations of police protocols and policies and procedures, because the burden of proof is not beyond a reasonable doubt or even probable cause. In a PIB investigation, it's by a preponderance of the evidence. And there were no pictures of Officer Vappy dining with the mayor. There were no pictures of what went on in the Pontabla apartment. And the mayor refused to make a statement. But all of that changed on April the 7th when someone provided us with a photograph of Officer Vappy dining on a balcony at 5:48 p.m. with the mayor. And according to our sources, we were told that he was on duty. But really, I believe that on duty, off duty, I think it is a clear-cut violation of departmental rules and policies, and we're going to see how this investigation plays out going forward.
Let's get to a break, and when we come back, talk about wanting things to be handled differently. We'll talk about the case of Darnell Hunter. You will recall he's the individual that was arrested for stabbing people in the French Quarter. Wait till you hear about this guy's criminal history and how this case was handled. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, I want to pivot to Darnell Hunter. Back in January of 2011, before a Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal in Jefferson Parish. A trial judge's comments were brought up during that appeal. The trial judge was Hans Liljeberg at the time. Know Hans very well. Talking about Darnell Hunter, he says, and I quote, "It makes me very nervous that he's got his history. You know, this charge on top of his history makes me very, very uncomfortable." He's talking about a juvenile record at that point in time in 2011. He also goes on to say that he did not feel that 3 years, the maximum sentence allowed for the charge in front of the judge at the time, was enough. The judge stated, "In 2011, this kid scares me." And where we went from there, one has to ask, why these outcomes?
Well, exactly. Right. So, yeah, we found that transcript that you just cited. So in the context, going back to, you know, June of 2011, those were the comments of Judge Liljeberg with this matter. But after that, after he got out on that, and he did time for that, he was also prosecuted in Orleans Parish on a variety of charges that included sex offenses and failure to register as a sex offender and indecent behavior. And he received 4 years Department of Corrections at hard labor, 2 years at Department of Corrections, hard labor, and a three-year sentence. So all of those were consolidated, and he served those times concurrently. So he gets out, and in 2022, the NOPD arrests him on a variety of charges, including armed robbery, attempted armed robbery, possession of a firearm by a felon, methamphetamine possession, and obstruction of justice. And all of those charges are extremely serious, could have resulted in him being charged as an habitual offender and could have been sentenced to decades in the penitentiary. But that was the August 9th arrest. And on what ended up happening was on December the 19th of 2022, the district attorney's office under Jason Williams agreed to reduce all of those felony charges to three misdemeanor charges. And he was released on a $300 ROR bond and was supposed to come back into court in January to plead guilty to those misdemeanor charges. Well, he never made it back into court again because he got arrested on a group of new felony charges, including armed robbery and aggravated battery. So the district attorney's office agreed to rescind the original plea deal allowing him to plead to misdemeanors and proceeded to prosecute him on both new felony charges. Well, all of that changed where in June of 2023, the district attorney's office, despite the fact that this guy didn't take advantage of the second chance that they were giving him, and before that second chance could be finalized, he commits another round of new violent felony offenses. The district attorney's office blows up that deal because he's been rearrested again, and now he's got two violent felony charges progressing. But in June of 23, they agree to allow him to plead guilty to offenses that are essentially an aggravated battery and a felon with a firearm. And the district attorney's office agrees to a downward departure. A felon with a firearm requires 10 years Department of Corrections. With a downward departure, that 10-year sentence becomes discretionary. And he pled guilty to a 10-year suspended sentence and 3 years of active probation. And the armed robbery charge that he committed after the first round of robberies in 2023, he was allowed to plead to an aggravated battery, and he got probation for that as well. So this is an offender with an extensive criminal history, particularly for crimes of violence, could have been and should have been in the penitentiary only to be released onto the streets. And within 3 months of him being granted probation, he's arrested again for stabbing an individual to death in the French Quarter. So this is a murder that should not have occurred, because if the district attorney's office had done their responsibility and done their homework and reviewed this individual's prior criminal history, this deal that they allowed him to plead guilty to return back out on the streets, should never have been done. And as a result, someone lost their life as a result of it. That's something that we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but I think that the district attorney's office needs to take a good, long look of how they decide some of the plea deals that they agree to. And this is an example of a plea deal gone terribly wrong, and it's actually cost someone their life because of this deal. Under normal circumstances, I can't think of another prosecutor that would have allowed for an offender with this history to plead to offenses that allowed him to be free on the streets.
There's no way that you could justify putting the community at risk of putting this individual back on the streets. I don't see it.
I agree.
I just asked the question, why?
Before I gave you this information, I called up the district attorney's office and said, listen, this is a case. This is what I'm going to say. Call me back and let me know if there's a justification for what you did. And I have yet to hear from the district attorney's office.
Still waiting on that call for sure. Thank you so much for joining us today. We've run out of time. Rafael Goinecci, President of Metropolitan Crime Commission. Have a great week. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.